Hello and welcome to the Middle East Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Middle East and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. This has been one of the worst years, if not the worst year in Tajikistan for rights activists, lawyers, journalists, and natives of the country's eastern Gorno-Badakhshan Autonomous Oblast, or GABAO. Since May this year, when there was violence in Gorno-Badakhshan, Tajik authorities have pursued a campaign against these people, hundreds of whom have been detained and scores them convicted at closed-door trials and given long prison sentences. The UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders, Mary Lawler, visited Tajikistan from November 28th to December 9th, and at the end of her visit released a report that painted a dire picture of the situation for human rights defenders and others in Tajikistan. We are fortunate at the Mejlis podcast to be able to speak with Mary Lawler about her recent trip. And thank you, Ms. Lawler. Thank you so much for making time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. And for the benefit of those in our audience who are not as familiar with as you are with Tajikistan, could you please tell us a little bit about your purpose in going to Tajikistan?
So I am the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders. I was appointed in May 2020 by the Human Rights Council, and the mandate is to look at the situation of human rights defenders around the world, to try and come up with ways to help protect them, and to seek the implementation of the UN Declaration on Human Rights Defenders, which the UN adopted by consensus in 1998. And the other part is that I have to engage with governments and try and persuade them not to persecute human rights defenders. And as part of the mandate, I do two reports every year, one to the General Assembly and one to the UN Human Rights Council. And along with that, I do country visits, two country visits a year. And my second country visit this year was Tajikistan. And there I was looking at the situation of human rights defenders, the threats, the risks they faced, and what recommendations I could make to the government to help protect them better and allow them to carry out their peaceful and legitimate work.
Could you tell us a little bit about your time in Tajikistan? I mean, some of the people you met with in the government and what you were looking to, who you were looking to talk, speak with, and which areas you wanted to go and travel to.
Yeah, so I met with a lot of government ministries, you know, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Office of the President, the Minister of Justice, the Committee for Women and Family Affairs, the Ministry of the Interior. And I also met with people from the Supreme Court and the Parliament and the State Security Committee, the Ombudsman and the State Prosecutor. So I had a range of meetings with the government. Now, aside from that, obviously, I was meeting with human rights defenders, and that was more tricky because a lot of them are very fearful. But we managed to meet up, and I listened firsthand to the risks and the persecution they were going through. Along with that, I did get permission from the general in charge of pre-trial detention to go and visit two journalists who are human rights defenders. So that was great. And then I had asked for permission to go to GABAO, which you mentioned in your introduction, but I didn't get permission for there. But I did go to Kujand, another region, to meet with human rights defenders there.
Okay, thanks. Thank you much. And I read your report. You had an interesting description of the situation with human rights defenders and their image in Tajikistan. Could you recount that for our audience, please?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't think the government understands who a human rights defender is, what their work is, and their legitimacy. And the definition of a human rights defender, the UN Declaration on Human Rights Defenders, spells it out. It says, everyone has the right, individually and in association with others, to promote and to strive for the protection of realization of human rights and fundamental freedoms at the national and international levels. And my working definition is anybody who is peacefully promoting and working for the human rights of other people and are at risk because of that work. So so that's the first thing you need to think about, I think, when you go to Tajikistan. The government really does not have a clear clue about what a human rights defender is. Now, what was your second question there?
Well, you know, just the image they had. Now, you the way you've explained what human rights defenders do is the definition that most of us would accept as being true. And yet, for some reason, in Tajikistan, human rights defenders have a more negative connotation to it.
The government, it has a negative view of human rights defenders. And indeed, society is not clear what human rights defenders do either. And the term human rights defender is seen negatively. It's almost, I suppose it's almost equated with some kind of extremism. In fact, and in one of the meetings, the government minister said to me that human rights defenders were encouraging young people to be extremists, which is absolute rubbish. But they are terrified of extremism in Tajikistan, and it colours everything. So it is a term that is negative in Tajikistan.
Thank you for clarifying that. That was an important point that I wanted to make. Now, you also talked about extremism and you know, the justified concerns that the Tajik government has of extremism. Of course, they've border Afghanistan. They've had their own problems with terrorism in the past. But the use of the laws of terrorism and extremism, what can you say about that? You mentioned that for some reason human rights defenders seem to get lumped in with this group. Are they the only group that gets accused of terrorism, extremism, that doesn't seem to have connections to such groups?
Yeah, I mean, human rights lawyers who are simply doing their professional job, taking up cases of anybody who needs a lawyer, regardless of whether the client is an extremist or not, the lawyer themselves are being labelled as extremist terrorists or foreign agents. And there's a law, you know, on preventing extremism and the law on combating terrorism, and also Article 307 of the Criminal Code. There are three pieces of legislation which are being used to criminalise and arrest human rights defenders. So that is going on, and it is going on against human rights lawyers, and it's also going on against journalists who are human rights defenders, who have been trying to monitor and document abuses by government authorities or work on really sensitive issues for the government, like brutality of state security forces, or housing evictions, or women with HIV, that kind of thing, that where it looks as if the human rights defender is being critical of the government and its policies.
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned the laws that work against human rights defenders and generally against activists in Tajikistan. But I was wondering, since you have traveled a lot and you do follow many, many countries, how did you find the state of civil society in Tajikistan?
Well, I only deal with people who are in danger because of their human rights work, no matter where I go around the world. Now, in Tajikistan, the service providers who are carrying out work that isn't considered difficult by the government or sensitive by the government, they can operate quite freely. And there's another very peculiar thing going on, which is, for example, there is a coalition against torture, and they have been targeted by the State Security Committee. They call them in for inspections frequently, the members of it, which are a group of organizations, NGOs. They interrogate them informally. They warn them against doing their work. They, in one case I came across, they abducted in the street a committee member. But that's the state security. On the other hand, the civil society are invited to input into some draft legislation. So, for example, there is the legislation on non-discrimination. They were invited to input into that legislation. So it's a mixed picture, you know, that in some cases some government departments are cooperating with them and in other cases they're being targeted. But for example, in the adoption of the law of anti-discrimination in July of 22, the two omissions were women living with HIV and defenders and LGBT people and the defenders who work for them. Because, as you know, LGBT rights in Tajikistan is a cultural and it's a taboo.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, you mentioned also, I'm curious, you mentioned that you'd got to visit with some of the rights defenders in Hojan, up in the north of Tajikistan.
In Dushanbe.
Oh, in Dushanbe. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Okay, you met with them in Dushanbe. Can you tell me a little bit about, what their biggest concerns were? I mean, what did they tell you was the thing that they lacked the most, or the thing that frightened them the most about doing that kind of work?
Well, these were two young people. One of them was called Abdullah Gabrati, and the other was called Delary Imamali. Delary is 35 years old. He has three children under about seven. He is quite a well-known blogger and journalist in Tajikistan. And Abdullah is 26 years old. And he was put in prison the day when his baby was 10 days old. And their trials were held behind, they were both closed trials, held behind closed doors. In fact, when relatives and journalists arrived at the specified place that they'd been told where the trial was going to be, it turned out that in Delary Imamoli's trial, it had already taken place in Shomansur District Court. So this is something that is really, really shocking. The fact that the trials are so unfair, they are often closed trials, and some of it de facto closed because they hold them in very small rooms and they don't allow any kind of independent monitoring or access to the trials. And because there is a climate of corruption in Tajikistan, it's very clear too that sometimes, corruption is involved in the trials. They're not conducted in a fair, open and transparent manner. And no national or international observers are allowed in accordance with international.
Let me just follow up too. We talked about lawyers earlier and the problems they have when they defend these kind of people. And they've really, one, there's a shocking shortage of lawyers in Tajikistan generally. And specifically when it comes to defending people that the government seems to have branded as some kind of perceived threat or enemy to the state or something like that, it's really hard to find legal representation. How did you find the legal representation of these two people when out there? Did they have adequate attorney, defense counsel?
Well, the two that I met have lawyers and they are going through the legal process. The prosecutor has looked for sentences of 10 and a half years for them. We have to wait and see what will happen. I, of course, am advocating for their release. But we saw also this week that a woman human rights defender and journalist, I can never pronounce her name. Yeah, she got 21 years. So, I mean, when it comes to lawyers, it is true that there is a dearth of lawyers, and particularly, as you say, lawyers to take up human rights work. And the Union of Lawyers is actually, we met with them and they are in negotiation with the Ministry of Justice on training more lawyers and getting more lawyers, which is a good thing. But on the other hand, the problem is there's a committee in the Ministry of Justice that decides on attestation, you know, for lawyers. So, I mean, that's not normal. It should be the Bar Association that decides on the exam and the attestation of lawyers. And the other thing is, if they've been charged and acquitted, they can't go back to practice.
That's part of the law, then, right?
Even if they're innocent, they're not allowed to go back to practice law.
Huh. Wow. Oh, that would keep people away, I suppose. We're going to come back to the topic in a second, but we've reached a halfway point in our discussion. So it's time for me to remind that this is the Mejlis podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pinier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. We're talking about the recent trip to Tajikistan by the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders. And with this is the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders, Mary Lawler. Thank you again for being with us, Ms. Lawler. You know, you've seen all this stuff, and of course you did preparatory work before you went to Tajikistan, so you knew what you were getting into when you went out there. Now, when you talk with officials about these things and point out that so many of these things are contradict international agreements they themselves have signed on to, but certainly UN charters have regulations and stuff. What reaction do you get from Tajik officials when you point out that there are things they are doing which simply are not acceptable under agreements and laws internationally?
I have to say they were very polite and very listened very carefully in all cases, in fact. And they didn't refute what I said. But in some cases, there was a robust discussion as to whether somebody was a human rights defender or an extremist. And I made it quite clear that I've been doing this work for 45 years and I know the difference between a human rights defender and an extremist or a terrorist. They are terrified of extremism, particularly because of the, the border there, very so near Afghanistan. And when I suggested to them that they needed to allow access to information and for the 70% of the population, the young population who are under 30, that if they didn't make sure they got good human rights education in the school, in Tajik, because that's missing as well, that they would be A, ignorant, and B, turned to extremism. They pointed to the West and said, you know, the West has all the information and yet an awful lot of young people have gone to become extremists. So they're sort of in that mindset, I suppose. Of course, nobody accepted that the list I gave them of human rights defenders that, you know, they were human rights defenders. And, you know, they all said things like they'd look into it all of that. And I did say to them that I'm not going to give up on Tajikistan and I plan to keep raising the cases. And if they do anything good before my report goes to the Human Rights Council, I'll be happy to publicly acknowledge it. I told them their reputation was deteriorating really rapidly and they should open up to independent media because nobody trust state media in the international community, and it would be in their interest to have their voices heard through independent media.
And without asking you to go too far out on a limb, are you confident that you'll get a response from them? There've been, I'm asking this because the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention has dealt with several people in Tajikistan before and sent letters to the Tajik government and asked for a response within 6 months or something and never gotten it. You know, did the officials you met with seem receptive to the idea of trying to work some of these things out before your report comes out?
I really couldn't say, to be honest. I have no clue. But If you judge by their previous behaviour, as you pointed out, it's unlikely. They are developing a national action plan at the moment, which, and they did accept 17 out of 35 recommendations in the Universal Periodic Review, which, as your listeners may know, is a kind of a review of states by other states. But they're very slow in the implementation. So again, it's a case of waiting to see. I plan now to do a comprehensive formal letter, you know, these formal communications to the Tajik government following on my visit and reiterating the points that I made during the visit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, I want to get back to Gabal for a second here. Did you want to go to Gabal? Did you request to go there?
Yeah, the way it happens is obviously the government of Tajikistan has to accede to your request to visit, and they did that. But then you send what they call a note verbal saying who you want to meet and where you want to go. And I did put down Gabal, but I didn't get permission. And that was disappointing for me because I had wanted to see what the situation was there. But on the other hand, most of the human rights defenders from Gabal are all in prison in Dushanbe. So there probably wouldn't have been many defenders for me to visit.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I understand that the Tajik government probably doesn't have to give you any reason for not letting you go to Gabal, but did they offer any particular reason why that was not possible this trip?
No, they just ignored it.
Okay. But was Gabal a topic when you met with them, some of these officials?
Oh, yes. Of course it was, because so many of the lawyers who are human rights defenders, you know, for example, I'm just trying to think of his name at the moment, but So he's a person who was a leader of the Lawyers Association in Pamir, and he was a member of the Civil Society Coalition Against Torture, and he was actually included in the Commission 44, and which was composed of representatives of local civil society and law enforcement bodies to investigate the events in Gabal on the 25th and 28th of November. And because of his professional experience, he was actually included also in the joint investigation group led by the General Prosecutor's Office. And they achieved some results, including the exhumation and re-examination of Gulbuddin Ziyabekov's body. But then, of course, and he was an interlocutor between victims' relatives, you know, and the indiscriminate use of firearms by the law enforcement and, you know, against impunity and torture. But they actually got lawyers assigned to deal with these cases that had arisen. But then after the brutal suppression in May in Korog and Roshan in Gabal and the mass arrest, this all changed. And he and 13 members of Commission 44 were reportedly arrested and interrogated. And he was questioned. They alleged he had received money from the Banned National Alliance of Tajikistan. And he was sent to a pre-detention center and charged with participation in a criminal association and other things. And his trial started in the 20th of September 22 behind, again, closed doors at a detention facility. I did ask also to see him, and I asked to see the journalist who's just been sentenced to 21, Mamad Shoaiba, the journalist and human rights defender who's just received a 21-year sentence. But I asked this, I was told the state deputy state prosecutor general and various others in the office. I was told by them that they didn't have the authority, that I should ask the Supreme Court. My meeting following that was actually with the Supreme Court when I asked them. They said that it wasn't up to them. I had to go to the judge of the court that they had been charged in. So, I mean, the whole system is so opaque. As far as I can see, everyone says it's somebody else's responsibility. But this is all because power is centralized and it's in the hands of the president and the State Security Committee.
Well, and this is, you know, if this is coming from, of course, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, one can imagine what it's like if you're an attorney out there trying to get some straight answers from an official to help out your client. I'm also curious, as diplomatically as you can put this, now, while you were out there during the last week you were there, there was six people sentenced to prison. The shortest sentence was 8 years, while one person was sentenced to 30 years. Just curious how that made you feel that you were out there and yet they were sentencing these people behind closed doors and to lengthy terms.
Well, it is always shocking. It is really, truly shocking when you hear of these dreadful sentences. Obviously, I only deal with human rights defenders, but I was so sad, you know, when Mehmet Shoaiba was sentenced. And indeed, even this morning, I woke up at 5:30. I was really upset about the two young men who are in terrible conditions in the pre-trial detention in Dushanbe, and one doesn't know what will happen, if anything will happen. So, but I mean, all I can do is keep trying and trying to influence the government in whatever way I can, and to try and, you know, continue to seek the release of these human rights defenders, and also to try and get the EU delegation and the US and EU member states that are there and the OSCE and the UN to support these human rights defenders more, because they really feel unsupported and abandoned by the international community. And of course, China is pouring money in there. So everyone is trying very hard to, I suppose, be a counterbalance. But that results in self-censorship, as far as I can see, by the international community when it comes to human rights defenders. So they need to build trust and act in accordance with the guidelines.
Out of curiosity, especially your last comments about the need to kind of not sit on the sideline and worry about what China's doing in Tajikistan, so you get these messages out to US and EU officials also?
I certainly did. I mean, there was a dinner with the US, the EU delegation, and all the embassies who are present. And I spoke about it at that dinner and said they, you know, in the case of the US, they have guidelines on human rights defenders. In the case of the EU, they have also got guidelines on human rights defenders, which spell out the steps that member states are supposed to take to help protect them. And some of it is very simple. It's like visiting them in their offices, inviting them to the embassy, going to monitor their trials, that kind of thing. And indeed, the OSCE has guidelines as well on the protection of human rights defenders. But from what I hear from human rights defenders, the support is very patchy and not sufficient. And they don't feel as if the embassies, the OSCE and the UN, and I also spoke to the UN country team, which, you know, they have different agencies there, about the need to include human rights defenders in their programming and listen to them and make participation is really important to building trust. And it won't happen overnight, but they all need to really work on this and be more of a support for human rights defenders, because they really do feel abandoned.
And you know, for the benefit of human rights defenders in Tajikistan, who might get, we have a Tajik service, a Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm sure they will take some of your comments. What can they do to get in touch with your office, or is there anything, any special programs that your office offers to human rights defenders? I mean, it would be an extra layer of protection, obviously, for them if they had some kind of contact with you or someone, you know, from the special office of the Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders. Any message for them? Any address or place they can call, write to?
Yes, indeed. And I have given the email to all the defenders that we met. My mandate is limited to, you know, interacting with human rights defenders and bringing their voices to the respective governments and also to the international community. So, I mean, I will continue to be in touch with the defenders that I met. I will also be writing a report, as I said, to be presented at the 2024 Human Rights Council. And I'm trying to think of my address at the moment. I can never remember it, but it's hrc/defenders@un.org. I'm nearly sure. But the people that I met who are at risk because of the kind of work that they're doing, they have that address.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any other comments you want to make, or any other points you want to make?
Well, I think it's really good, you know, that you are doing this podcast, because to be honest, the more I travel around the world, the only thing that governments respond to, as far as I can see, is reputational damage that comes through publicity. So the more publicity that you can, you know, make about the situation in Tajikistan, the better. So I'm delighted to be here because I do think it's a moral support for human rights defenders to be able to hear publicity about what is going on and how they need to be protected. I have a website and anyone can contact me through the website. And the website is, just one second and I'll get it out. It's srdefenders.org. And there's a part on the website where human rights defenders can contact me in confidence, and it is secure. The website is secure.
Great. Thank you for mentioning that. And I also want to thank you. And I know I speak for many people for your report, which I thought was very fair, very needed at this time. It raised a lot of critical points that have been plaguing Tajikistan's reputation, its government policies for a long time. So thank you very much for your report. And thank you, Mary Lawler, the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders, for being on our program today. And also a big thank you to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.